Thanks very much, Nikki. Let me just put myself together here. Amanda has certainly raised a benchmark and ears this morning, and there's no way I'll meet that, but I'll try to be as entertaining as I can and move my arms around a little bit. I have to admit, first of all, that I do have a Facebook page, which is a little peculiar because I'm almost 50. I don't own a cat, and I don't think, you know, online games are very cool. But I have to be there. The main reason for being there is that, I'll start it a different way. I'll leave the papers alone. Facebook is very much a communication method, and I think it's really important all through my talk today to think about how we communicate, how we talk to one another, and how we talk to one another over great spaces, and how we've done that for the last 30 to 40 years. My father recently turned 80, and he can remember the first time he ever used a telephone. So, you know, the technology of communication is still within, you know, one lifespan, and it is changing considerably. But I should talk about the new technologies, and the Facebooks and the Twitters and all of those are part of that. Facebook is very useful. You have a lot of, I had high school friends turn up and renew contact, and some of the people I actually wanted to talk to, which was really quite good. But I also, last year, I had some of these Facebook friends start having a conversation with me in London, where I'd said I was stuck and I needed their money so I could get home to Australia. Well, one of those friends rang me to say, well, I got to London very, very quickly because they'd only had coffee with me just yesterday. So somebody had hacked my Facebook identity and was asking my friends and those high school students for money. So I contacted the Facebook helpline, and there is a helpline, which amazed me, and within half an hour that whole account was cancelled. So there is good and bad in social networking and in modern internet-based communications. It can be great, it can have terrific benefits, but it can also bite you in the ass. Most technology does have good and bad. My children want me to invest in a 3D television. They thought that Avatar was really cool. But reported recently, one of the biggest users or the biggest exploiters of 3D television is already touted to be the porn industry. So I don't know about the idea of having 3D porn in the lounge room. But that's the way technology can be hijacked. But the new technologies are very, very much about communication. So let's talk about that. There's two important elements in communication. One is communication itself, but the other one is information. And I want to take information first, because that's quite often the element that's overlooked or neglected. The new technologies are worthless without new information to access. That information could be data that has not been available in a digital form before. It could be back issues of newspapers, magazines, annual reports, risk assessment reports, instruction manuals, a whole range of things. Much of this is being digitized so that we can take advantage of the search functions of the digital reports. Some of that's being resurrected from the archives, the air-conditioned sheds that are out in, I don't know, Frankopan South or somewhere. And what that's doing is it's allowing us to access a depth of data that would have just been closed off before. And some of that can be really, really useful in terms of the issues of safety, where seemingly new hazards and situations appear, but in reality, there's a similar issue that may have turned up in 1961 in Frankopan South. And increasingly, I believe, we will see that many of the new concepts of safety management are really old concepts that have been rebadged and repackaged to sound new. Digital information can provide a deeper knowledge base. We can go back and actually get a much, much deeper perspective of what safety is than what we can just within our internet memory. I think it's important here to acknowledge that one of the reasons why the digitization of information is important is that more and more businesses and corporations are losing their corporate history, their corporate memory, their organizational knowledge. We're less likely to pay attention to the wisdom of the elders, of the elder employees, because there are more modern ways to access what many think is new information. And it's really, it is information that's new to many, but is old and familiar to many others. We're told that in the modern world, we may have five careers through our lifetime in different industries and needing different skills. Well, this can mean that I think as Amanda said before, we've got psychic vampires. Some people can suck up information from one place, just churn it into a marketable form, and then just use it to get the next job. The continuity, the knowledge, gets lost from that organization. And I think the digitization of information can compensate that a little bit. So digital information can exist, well, should exist, I think, without the personal, without the greedy, without the office politics, and without animosity. It's knowledge. It's pure knowledge by itself. But, and it is a big but, that information needs to have an integrity of its own. It needs to be, as much as we can, have that information as being true information. The other important element is communication itself. Now, all of the new technologies, as I said before, are methods of communication. They are not the message. They are not necessarily important in themselves. What they are conduits for important information. So let's have a look at a couple of those options. You may have heard of Twitter. In fact, I'll be interactive again. How many people know what Twitter is? Okay. Do you know that yourselves or because your kids or others use it? Yeah? Okay. All right. Well, Twitter, for those who don't know, Twitter provides messages through the internet and onto phones of less than around 140 characters. So you've only got 140 spaces to put in a message or a statement or a piece of information. Now, what safety information can be provided in such a limitation? Well, not much. You could send tweets to people like, don't forget to wear your high-vis vest, or are your bootlaces tied, or have you done a risk assessment? But after a very short while, the reader, the receivers of those tweets, will just ignore them, because although they relate to safety, they're just condescending and they just become a nuisance. What Twitter can do best is refer the reader to other important safety information. So it's a signpost to where to go and get the information and hopefully the truth or what you need to create find the truths. And a tweet may be something like safety alert, vehicle recall, more information at so and so, or call such and such, and with a link through to the phone number or to a link on your intranet. I tend to consider that Twitter is an internet version of SMS or texting on your mobile phone. Mobile phones have the added and important advantage, though, that everyone carries a mobile phone with them whenever they can, not necessarily underground or in pits, but when they can. The added advantage is that they actually look at the phone each time it goes ping and they receive a text. Tweets need a computer or one of the really flash new phones that I don't have. And although phone coverage is always an issue in Australia, mobile phones seem to have better coverage than the internet and are worth considering what you can actually do with them. Texting has the advantage that it gets read, but it has the limitation that you can't then link through to other information very easily. So it's very much a standalone message, very useful as a reminder of something coming up, an event or a safety meeting, for instance. But social networking sites such as Facebook, there's others called LinkedIn and Plaxo, are more complex and have some risks. Security, as I mentioned earlier with people getting money out of my friends or trying to, is a major risk. The social networking sites are not hosted on your computer's servers, on your company's servers. You don't own them. You don't set the rules. You don't police what your employees write or say or what they cross-link to. And there's also debate about the amount of time that employees spend on such sites during work hours. So there's a lot of things that you need to work out if you're going to allow people to have access to this. But they can be used for good as well as evil. People who work in isolated and remote locations can gain considerable benefit from maintaining a contact with families and friends and head office and others through these networks. Safety information, as long as it is not confidential, can be distributed through these networks. Social networking is an important concept in the mining that the mining sector and others can use for your own purposes. If you want, you can establish a network yourselves or take all the concepts from Twitter and Facebook and set something up yourselves, if I don't believe you already have. And these things can take the best of all those bits and pieces and put them together to configure something that meets your specific industry needs and also exists within your industry parameters or values and norms, for instance. It's already being done in the dairying industry, and it's having considerable benefit in reducing isolation and improving the skills bases of farmers. In Victoria, it's being used not as a standalone network. It's what it's doing is providing basic information to people in support of the other networks that they have, where they'll actually get together and actually visit other people's dairy farms. They'll give advice on soil and they'll share that experience. So they use Twitter and other networks as linkages to get like-minded dairy farmers together. But we shouldn't forget about email. And email is an established technology nowadays. But I think it's best still to not just see it as a pain in the ass, but by taking it back to what it was designed as. It was designed as electronic mail. So it was an alternative. It was a way of delivering handwritten or delivering typed correspondence electronically. And the worth of that the technology is the communication method. Yeah, that communication method is in the correspondence. It's not in the method that it's being sent out. It's the truth, the value is in the content of the email, of the correspondence itself. And as a quick example, if I receive a bill in the post, I chuck it on the sideboard and I'll look at it later. But if an envelope is addressed generically to the household, that just goes straight into recycling. But if I get a letter from my favourite uncle with family gossip, I'll open it straight away. And that's the same motivations, the same personal responses exists in email. So if I get a safety email each day, I quickly stop reading them. If I get a safety email that is not addressed specifically to me, I'm more likely to delete it. In fact, there's a CEO of a business information company that I know in Melbourne who refuses to reply to any emails that are not directly addressed to him. If he's CC'd, he never gets a look in. I'm not sure about the wisdom of his time management, but it's an interesting idea. But if I get an email that says something like, "Kevin, following on from a safety meeting in Franakapan last Tuesday, here's the information that George mentioned in the meeting," well, I'll look at that straight away because the content needs to be valuable and relevant. It needs to talk to me. If it's addressing me and it's relevant, I'll value it, I'll use it. And it's really important to think about how you respond to electronic messages that you get so that you can just filter out your workload and filter out your headspace, so that you're not getting sucked into things that are on the outside of what you really should be focusing on. It's very easy to be distracted. Now, last night at dinner, I was talking with Norm Jennings. I don't know if Norm's here this afternoon, of the Minerals Advisory Council. And he was telling me about the consequences and the flow-ons of the Digging Deeper research project, which has generated considerable change in some sections. And I think we heard today from the Minister that the new research project is under development. Well, I first heard about Digging Deeper when two of the researchers spoke at a health and safety conference in Sydney a couple of years ago. And I'm pretty cluey on safety stuff that's out there and launches and releases and things, but I'd never heard of it before. But the research results were very important. It was terrific that a report was being brought to the attention of somebody, of people outside of mining to people in the broader safety profession. But that was the extent of the promotion outside of mining. But 2 years on, the Advisory Council had CEO workshops and built on the findings of the Digging Deeper research to great effect, but only mining heard about it. Now, I know the significance of the research findings, but, you know, I look for OHS information. It's part of my business. And my safety professional colleagues are generally ignorant of what safety work is done in the mining sector in Australia. I was really impressed by some of the innovation finalists that I've just heard about, and I could see the applications in a whole range of industries of several of those finalists. Now, I suggested to Norm that the promotion could be given to in the wider industry aspects of the research and to the processes of change that the industry applied as a result of that research. Even if the findings themselves, even if the fatigue management things and all that sort of stuff don't transfer to other industries, as I think they do, but if they didn't, that change process still does. And so you can have a look, and that's what social networking tends to do, is that it provides you with a process of communication, a process of communicating really good stuff. And I think it's important to look at both of those elements. And I'm a big supporter of cross-industry communication. I think the mining sector is missing real opportunities to show the general applicability of the innovations in safety management and hazard control. And an example of cross-industry communication is, as a consultant for 15-odd years, I have found solutions when I have consulted to the sex industry in Victoria. There are solutions, there are some innovations in the licensed brothels in Victoria that I've been able to apply in other industries. And morning, afternoon tea, I'm happy to discuss a bit further if you want. So you can get innovations all over the place, and it's certainly worth looking for them. But in terms of social networking, too often communication does not consider the reader, does not understand the reader, does not consider the audience to which it's communicating. The reader may be a busy person, the reader may likely to miss their phone, they may hate computers, they may never use a computer. Well, one large multi-site company has looked at how they communicate safety effectively across Australia. It found that the new technologies, the texting and all of those, were useful for distribution, but that the safety information was accepted and used only when it was supported by personal face-to-face communication. Now, we've heard some examples already today where the information is given out and it's presented to people at the worksite in meetings and those sorts of things. And that's fantastic. And that's the way that other companies have found the only way to make safety information applicable at the shop floor. So how it worked in that company was that they issued a safety alert or a bulletin. It was emailed to each site manager. The information was printed off, so it was presented in a format that could easily be printed off, like some of the safety alerts that we've seen in the as used in some of the innovation presentations. It was the information was stuck on the notice board and those sorts of things, as well as being used as the basis for meetings with employees and health and safety reps. And the hard copies were distributed to anyone who wanted them. So the IP of the content in relation to safety wasn't a big deal. They believed that safety was a more important consideration. And the company found that the safety information always generated questions. These may have concerned the use of the information provided, or might have come from someone who couldn't quite grasp the concepts that were being discussed and presented. The information, the safety information, needed to be translated by someone at the worksite who could see how the information from head office or DPI or whoever could be applied to that particular worksite. The company didn't see electronic communication as a way of just sending out information in the hope that it would be used, or of sending out information on the cheap. The safety information was in support of the safety resources that were already in place. It built on that existing culture rather than just chucking, you know, fish food out into the pond and seeing which fish came to the surface. Often we hear of the importance of two-way communication, that safety culture comes from leadership at the top but requires feedback and support from below. Well, I'm still undecided on that, and I'm still waiting for the definitive evidence. But too often we send out information for it simply to bounce back. And we find that's communication, and it's not. It's doing something that we can report has been done. But no communication has occurred, no dialogue has occurred. Similarly, establishing a website is insufficient if one wants to communicate with clients, or stakeholders or suppliers. One organisation in Australia recently spent $90,000 on developing a website, but forgot to budget for anyone to provide the content. So they set up a structure, but didn't think about what they were going to say, just how they were going to say it. Several of its representatives independently set up a presence, an organisational presence, on Facebook and LinkedIn. When the organisation was asked whether they sanctioned these sites, whether they were official sites, the response was, oh, yeah, we just heard about that the other day, and, oh, we, you know, can't see any harm, we'll let them have a go and see what comes of it. Well, that's just ridiculous. I mean, to do anything in the new communications or in the new technology must be supported by a strategy. If you have no strategy, it's just, you're just chucking money on the internet to say that you're there, but it's not going to have any benefit at all. In my experience, also, what I should say is both Facebook and LinkedIn sites are open for anyone to join and to post comments. So the sites are largely unmoderated, and so the risk of abuse, the risk of these sites are very high. And I think that Telstra set up a customer feedback blog about 3 years ago now, 3 or 4 years ago now, and it absolutely collapsed because everybody who posted something on the blog or listed a comment was saying, Telstra's crap. You know, I get no service. What's going on here? And it was just what they call in the blogosphere, you know, flaming. And Telstra realised that, yes, we're getting feedback from our customers, but none of it's good, and it was so overwhelming that they just closed down the site and gave it up as an experiment. But while talking about readership, look, I have to state the bleeding obvious. I mean, you know, workers are not fools. They have a really good nose for corporate bullshit. So, and if the workers see information coming from head office as bullshit, it'll never get read. So it's really important that the truth, the value, the integrity of that information comes from head office in a format that the workers, the readers, will actually embrace, use, and see the sense of. Or else it's just an email or a tweet for no reason or no great benefit. In my experience, people want to hear about people. I think Amanda Gore referred to it as hearing stories. I mean, you tell stories, people lock in the moral of the story or the lesson of that story. People relate very much to the achievements of peers and workmates. I think we might see some of that in terms of the awards and the achievements that are going to be discussed further tonight. But the achievements are not just what used to be called hatches, matches and dispatches, you know, just who's married and who's had babies and who's left the company. But to someone who has achieved, it needs to be tailored to someone who's achieved a very positive safety outcome, or someone who has gained recognition for their efforts, or someone who's created a solution to a hazard. Now, I think somebody mentioned earlier that media loves a disaster. It's very hard to get attention for good news, and that is true. But I think that over probably the last 10 or 15 years, companies have started giving up offering good news. You know, the only good news is a response to a disaster. So I think, you know, if your companies have a communication strategy, you might want to have a look at what you're actually communicating. Is it reactive? Or is it constructive? So I think that's a useful thing for you to look at yourselves. People also want to hear an independent voice. I haven't talked about blogs or web blogs because these are slightly different from the bulk of social networks. I've run the Safety at Work blog for over 2 years. It generates no income itself, but it is an outlet for independent writing on safety initiatives and hazards, principally in Australia. I have another Australian OHS professional writing for me, and I have a Canadian doing so as well. Now, the blog reports on issues in the press and elsewhere that may have some relevance to safety management. But what makes it different is that we express opinions. Now, opinions clearly are not evidence, but opinions are valuable and we do listen to opinions, and if they come from a credible source, we act on those opinions. So some of the opinions that I'll express on the blog, and you'll see elsewhere, they could be wrong, they could be ill-informed, they could be half-cocked, but more often than not, they are seen, that they are an alternate perception. And I think Amanda also talked about how we perceive things. So the lucky thing about blogs is that it is very easy to have a dialogue. And I've had people who've, when I've said something and written an article, and they said, well, look, Kevin, that's, you're right, but have you considered this? And so they do contest the opinions. And that's terrific, because you'll find that it generates a conversation and a debate. How to control that debate and how to not let it get out of control, out of hand, is something that Telstra just couldn't cope with. A really good example of an alternate perception on a hazard I'll take as an article I wrote that appeared on in Business Spectator. It's a finance newsletter by Alan Kohler and Robert Gottliebson and others. And the article was, we looked at the Godwin-Gretsch issue of Oscar affair. Was that earlier this year or was it last year? It must be last year because Turnbull was involved. And we looked at that issue that had been going on for 2 weeks in the press, in the political agenda, and we looked at it in relation to workplace stress and workload. And the saga had continued for quite some time, but no one had written about whether this case said anything about health, safety, welfare, workloads, stress. And one of the traits of the safety professionals that, certainly not in this room, but you'll find elsewhere, is that they don't like to talk on the record about their activities. They're not often prepared to tell their stories. And particularly stories that are not always fantastic stories. They're not prepared to tell the stories that are both, failures and successes, or how they've achieved success out of a failure. And I think those are quite often some of the best stories that we can hear, and certainly the ones with the strongest legacy. What safety professionals need to do is to look through the new eyes at what they do, and they need to look at new perspectives and see if the new perspective can be of interest to the broader community. Don't just keep it within your own industry sector. If it may be of interest, put it out there and see who takes it up. Certainly the innovations that we've seen just before, I think there's some terrific newsworthiness in those innovations, and I'd love to see them used elsewhere. Now, I'm not a marketing expert, and so I can't talk about how social network is being used to sell products. But marketing is about communication, even though it is also about manipulation. If we want to sell safety to our employees and contractors, marketers are unlikely to be very helpful. But the concepts of marketing may be helpful, and it's worth considering them. A basic marketing technique is to know one's market, to know your readership. I've talked before about this, but it's important that you understand what communication methods are best for your readers, for your stakeholders, for your employees. You've got to ask yourself whether you want them to change what they do to fit your communication strategy, or should your strategy fit your employees' needs? It's often a question that's just overlooked. And that brings back to the modern technologies of communication. By and large, the methods are of social networking. We work and live in a society. We measure ourselves by social benchmarks. We establish social relations by communicating. We talk and we listen. One of the most difficult skills, combinations of skills for anyone, and Amanda might say even more difficult for men. I'd certainly put myself up for that. It's very hard to do. But social networking is not a niche activity. Marketing figures released last year said that since May 2007, 8 million Australians have joined Facebook. Now, not all of them know how to use it, but 8 million are on it. And that's almost a third of the population, so we shouldn't ignore it. There are also a lot of marketers out there, and a lot of them get the new social networks, but very few of them understand safety. And I think there's probably a very good business opportunity there for someone in the room. A risk with social networking is also that it can start to feed on itself and add nothing to the sum of our knowledge. Twitter will report on something posted on LinkedIn, which came from a blog which reported on a story from a newspaper that related to Twitter. Well, it's a real risk. Those where we're getting, you know, the internet's getting filled with crap, and it's a real risk. But what can break the cycle is new content, is interesting content. So if you have stories about your achievements, certainly you're exchanging them here at this conference. But look beyond the conference and look beyond your industry, because I can say from somebody outside of the mining industry that I've been really impressed by some of the solutions that have been put forward today. And many, many more people need to know these things. The conference is itself an important method of communication. You've listened to me for probably 20 minutes, hopefully not half an hour, but I hope there's time for some questions, and I hope that you'll ask some. Thanks very much for your time.